Thanks, Adam. Good morning, everybody. Hope you're enjoying the wonderful winter time. Thank you for being here. We've been impressed with what a difference a degree or two can make this week. And we're glad to be together this morning. I want to especially express our good wishes to our younger brothers and sisters here who are headed back to college either today or this week. Our prayers are with you, and we're proud of you, and we wish for you all the best this spring semester. And it's a joy to call it spring semester. I received a little publication in which a recent edition consisted of a series of brief essays by Joe Barnett. I looked at it because I got to meet Joe and talk to him back in my Texas days. The first sentence of the first essay began like this: "Answering the following questions will jumpstart the next chapter of your life." That line captures my imagination, and for several reasons. One is its concern with the next year of my life. Another chapter, so to speak. And what kinds of things can I decide or can I answer that will help me this year to build upon the promises of God which we had the joy of reading last Lord's Day morning? Another reason this takes my imagination involves the changes that are ahead for us as a congregation. I care about Adam's family. I care about us. I'm concerned with what kind of choices we can make that will help us to honor the Lord and to bless each other going forward. What will it be like for us this time next year? And the most important thing simply involves the teaching of Jesus. I think I recognize these four questions, especially as I've been reading the Gospel of Luke and noticing the parts of it which address what life is all about. Jesus especially speaks to this in Luke chapter 6, in what we call the Sermon on the Plain, for the lack of a better term, and then in Luke chapter 12, where he is dealing with the problems of covetousness and anxiety and what they do to human experience. So what are these questions, the answers to which will jumpstart the next chapter of my life? What are these questions that are also central to what Jesus taught when he was thinking about how he was living his life, how life works, and how we should go about ours? Well, there are four of these questions. They seem simple, but man, are they ever meaningful when you stop to think them over for a few minutes. So let's try to do that now. The first question is this in my control? The song Adam just led us in singing reminded us of the value of this question. Some things are in my control, under my control. In Luke chapter 6, if you look at verse 45, where Jesus talks about everyone who hears my words and does them being like somebody who builds his house on a rock, he's talking about choosing to act on what we hear. It's a choice that we can, that I can make or you can make. You back up a verse or so, and he mentions the words we speak. The things we say are not things that just take hold of us and take over. They're things that come from us. We can have some control of those things, or we should. And if you back up a little farther in that same verse 45, you notice that he's talking about what one thinks about in his heart. One can have control over what goes on in his mind, what's allowed to roll over and stay there, and then what we choose to consider and to value. Of course, chief among what we have control over is ourselves. Self-control is both a Christian grace and the fruit of the Spirit. And for Christians, the control of self is the mightiest, strongest kind of power that can be exercised in life. Anything which involves awareness of myself and anything which involves choices that I make, I have control over. But equally important, and sometimes even more so, is the fact that not everything is under my control. Not everything is under your control. We kind of learned about that with snowstorms that pass through the Ozarks. You don't have control to make it snow, Adam, or to not make it snow, Barney. No control over those kinds of things. There are lots of things in life that we don't have control over. In Luke chapter 12, Jesus uses this fact as a reminder when he's talking about stressing over letting things tear us up in our lives. Verse 25 is my favorite, Luke 12. And which of you, by being anxious, in other words, by thinking it over, by investing yourself, by struggling with it, by any effort that you want to make, can add a single hour to the span of his life? You got to think, to get his point, you got to think of someone whose life has come to its end. And that person then going back and that, you and I can form habits and so forth that we know can add to our life expectancy. But once that life has been lived, none of us have the ability to go back and make it that much longer. An alternate translation of this verse, and just as good a translation, you'll notice, could be, which of you, by being anxious, can add a single cubit to his stature? And we're told that a cubit is about 18 inches. You might put higher heels on or thicker soles. Or like Barney Fife used to do on Mayberry, you might tie a rope to your chin and your head and stretch yourself from the door facing, but you can't add 18 inches to the height of your stature. Or at least I've not been able to. I don't think you can do that. There's some things that are outside of our control. That doesn't make us bad people or less valuable or worth or less able to do good in our lives. It just means that some things are just what they are. So whatever cannot be decided by me, and whatever cannot be changed by me, either in me or in you or just in the world, I might wish were different, I might be concerned about, but it's not my fault. I'm not guilty over it. And that's an important thing. So answering this first question, is this in my control, is like coming to a fork in the road in our lives. If the answer is no, if it's not in my control, then I'm dealing with something that I am to accept and to ask God in prayer to help me cope with in my life. Don't you have some things like that where that's the proper way to proceed Just accept it and ask God to help you deal with it. On the other hand, if it is in my control, then there is a responsibility there that I have. I'm responsible. And I'm to be concerned with addressing my responsibility with wisdom and doing my best at it. I can ask God's help in that way, but also I'm to personally attend to that which I'm responsible for. So are you, of course. That's what makes us people. So first, is this in my control? The second question then is this. Is this worth worrying about? I ran across a little piece that Brother Mac Lyon wrote some years before. Brother Lyon, the originator and longtime speaker for the Search TV program. We had him at North National before, and what a kind and gentle man and a faithful man. He wrote about the difference between worrying and the kind of responsible concern, the healthy concern that I just made reference to in answering offering the answer to the first question. How is worrying different from healthy concern? Well, one, worrying focuses on what might happen, while the other is involved with what is happening. One, worrying keeps reminding us of past failures and pains and doubts that ought to have been confessed and forgiven and forgotten and left. The other, responsible concern, is busy with the real demands of life. One, worrying turns our thoughts inward so that we become self-absorbed and even selfish, as if everything is about us and depends on us. And the other one, concern, involves us in the lives of other people who need help. And it moves us in that way. And then one, worrying, concentrates on things that can't be changed anyhow. One reason is because they haven't even happened. And the other recognizes the need and accepts the challenge of it and gets involved in the action. There's a big difference between worrying and healthy concern. Jesus did not teach indifference. He also did not simply get on the people for worrying. What he did was to lead us toward healthy answers to this question, is it worth worrying about? In Luke chapter 12, you notice this. In this chapter, beginning with verse 15, he deals with covetousness. A person's life does not consist in the things he has. And then in verse 22 beginning, he deals with anxiety. A person's life does not consist in what he has. Same principle answers both covetousness and anxiety. That's important. So here's the way Jesus proceeds with this. It's as if he says, wait, isn't your life about more than food and clothing? Are you like the creatures my grandpa used to put up in his barn, keep them in the pen and put hay out before them and they're okay? Aren't you a person? Verse 22 and 23 ask this. I tell you, don't be anxious about your life, what you'll eat, or your body, what you'll put on. For life is more than food and the body more than clothing. And that's true both for good and bad here. That means that focusing just on this, even with a smug self-satisfaction, is likely to leave you without any treasure toward God. On the other hand, being torn up with it, as if it's likely never to happen, can leave you torn up and without treasure with God. Second thing Jesus said, isn't God caring for things that are less valuable than you are? And I have to look around to think a little bit to answer yes with this. Jesus' answer in verses 27 and 28 involves the lilies and how they grow. And he says, but if God so clothes the grass of which is alive in the field today and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, how much more, notice that's the point, will he clothe you, O you of little faith? Is God taking care of you? Yes, he is. All right, number three, isn't your Father pleased to give you his kingdom? That involves giving you his son. It involves all of that. Verse 32, fear not, little flock, for it's your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. The kingdom is his rule over your life or in your life. Does it make sense that God would want to rule your life and then want you to be without? That would bring disgrace on him. That's the reasoning Jesus is using here. So, is this really worth worrying about? Is it more important than your life, more important than God's care, and more important than God's kingdom, God's goodness? If the answer is no, then occupy myself with more important things. If it's yes, then I need to attend to it. And that's the third thing here that we get to. Is this the most important thing to me? So you follow what we're saying. Am I in control of this? Is this worth worrying about? And now, is this the most important thing? Even where I do have a responsibility, I don't everywhere, but even where I do, and where I'm addressing that responsibility with concern, I still have no way of knowing whether I'm doing it, whether I'm putting first things first, until I have an answer to this question. Until I know what is the most important thing for me. What is it for you? Now, in the place where we've been reading, Jesus has something to say about what's really important. That's what gives power to the rest of what he says. He says in verse 31 that God's kingdom is most important. That's his claim. That's what he says is first. To believe in him means to agree with him about this. Instead, seek his kingdom. Seek it. That means it's most important. He says that it's God's rule or God's kingdom that provides a person with treasure that does not fail. That's in verse 33, if you notice, where he's talking about giving to help the people in need. Provide yourself. Notice that it follows with the Father giving you his kingdom, and he's advising us to imitate the Father in giving his kingdom in that way and all that that might involve. Provide yourself with money bags that don't grow old, with a treasure in the heavens that doesn't fail, where there's no thief approaches and no moth destroys. Now, if his kingdom is most important and if it provides treasure that don't fail, then Jesus gets to the bottom line. If your treasure is there, that's where your heart will be. This is the thought that he seems to get back to twice in Luke chapter 12. And it's almost like Jesus knows that it's easy for us to fool ourselves about this. So we can say, Bill, does the kingdom come first in your life? Is that most important? Oh, yeah. Well, what did you do with your time this past week? What did you spend your free time on? What had your attention? What were you thinking about? That's That's the question. Jesus says, if your treasure is there, it'll be most important to you. Verse 31, the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. And verse 34, where your treasure is, there your heart be also. I think what comes between involves treasure where your heart is, what's most important to you, and what that does in your life. It seems like the Lord is also always getting back to this particular question. In 11:28, he said, don't go around talking about being blessed by who your mom is or whose child you are. Blessed rather are those who hear the word of God and keep it. In 10:20, he says, don't go around rejoicing over who you have power over. Rejoice that your names are written in heaven. In 9:32, he says, don't look back and start thinking about what all you've done, where all you've been. No one who puts his hand to the plow and looks back is fit for God's kingdom. And every time he's just saying, what's most important to me? That these questions have a way of clarifying, don't they? Not confusing, but clarifying. The fourth one is this. Is this who I want to be? Back in Luke chapter 6 now for a second, this is another of the things that Jesus is clear about. In all of his teaching, but here in this passage especially, 43 and 44, Luke 6, for no good tree bears bad fruit, nor again does a bad tree bear good fruit. For each tree is known by its own fruit. I'll stop there for a second. And you can see what he's getting at. I am what I say and do. You are what you say and do in a very real way. So think about what this means. I can look in the mirror of real life by asking if what I am saying and doing reflects the kind of person I want to be. I can look in the mirror and see myself as I am. Can I see what I aspire to be there? Is there, spiritually speaking here, look over Luke chapter 6 a bit. You can see what he's getting at. Is there evil treasure in my heart? Insincerity? Hypocrisy and criticism? Superiority and vengefulness? Then is this who I want to be? And it's really thought-provoking to notice the Lord's way for me to adjust my image and what I see there, the image of myself and what I see. In Luke chapter 6, he sort of lays out the thought there are two choices in what you want to be. One of them is just to do the things that even the sinners do the same. And he says that. He says that three times in Luke chapter 6. And what he's dealing with here is even the sinners can treat their enemies like their enemies treat them, or can treat their friends like their friends treat them. He says it in verse 32. If you notice it, Luke 6. You love those who love you. What benefits that to you? Even the sinners love those who love them. Verse 33, if you do good to those who do good to you, what benefits that to you? For even the sinners do the same. There's verse 34, if you lend to those from whom you expect to receive, what credits that to you? Even the sinners lend to sinners to get back the same amount. And I know we've all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. He's talking about people who have no thought of living by the rule of God. Anybody can treat other people like other people treat them. You need no gospel to do that, right? The other option is found in verse 40 and in verse 36. Verse 40, a disciple is not above his teacher, but everyone, when he's fully trained, will be like his teacher. So is this not like other people, but like my teacher? And then in verse 36, be merciful even as your Father is merciful. So on this, on one hand is even as the sinners do the same, and on the other hand is like my teacher, like my Father. Which do I want to be? And then there is an action point in the middle of all of this, and it's verse 31, which says basically, if you want to rise above this and be this, here's how to proceed. And as you wish that others would do to you, do so to them. Ask yourself what's most important to you and how you want to be treated. Be thoughtful enough to see the situation that the person around you is in and ask yourself, if you were them, having the most important thing that you already have is most important in your life, how would you want to be treated? And then do it without them waiting for them to do it for you first. And that'll make you more like God and more like your teacher than like the crowd around in the world. So here are the questions for the way ahead. Is it in my control? Is this worth worrying about? Is it the most important thing to me? And is this who I want to be? Do you think that's easy or soft preaching? Do you look at it and think there's not enough doctrine there for you? I urge us all to think a little, and I think if we do, we'll recognize in these questions at least two things. One is the problems sin introduces into our lives. It makes us torn up over things as if we were God ourselves. It causes us to ruin our lives trying to either get something or to keep it. It messes up our sense of priorities so that we devote ourselves to idols, and it so confuses us that we are not even able to see who we want to be, much less how to be that. But if you think a little, the promise of the gospel stands out here. The Lord is offering us with the kingdom of God, with His rule in our lives, the ability to be at peace with who we are and with other people, and to devote ourselves to real concerns in our lives that are most important, that help us become what we want to be. And that is something in this world that all of us need. Jesus came that we might have life and have it abundantly. And part of that involves the answering of these four questions. Pray over it this week. If there's a way this morning in which you need to answer one of these questions in response to the gospel, and if we can be helpful in that way, assistance to you, please let us know that by coming while we stand and sing this song.